is Eddie Harris with Listen Here, recorded in 1967. Harris played tenor and introduced, believe it or not, the electrical saxophone. The electrically amplified saxophone is really what I should say. He also played piano, electric piano, and organ, and is responsible for much of the music on The Cosby Show. He died in Los Angeles from bone cancer and kidney disease in 1996 at age 62. Listen Here features Ray Barretto on percussion, Jody Christian on piano, Melvin Jackson on bass, Richard Smith on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And it is Monday, April the 8th. And would you believe it? Atlantic Magazine, which describes itself as a leading journal of American thought, culture, and politics, published a major article this month that asks a rather interesting question. What is that question, you say? Has President Obama done enough for Black Americans? I swear to you, I had nothing to do with this. I didn't call them. I don't know if they were listening, but it is interesting. The subhead for the article, it's a very long piece, was equally telling. It says, for many, this is still a land of unequal opportunity. A history-making president may not be enough. Well, the president's deliberate avoidance of the critical issues confronting African Americans is so blatant. It is so wrong-headed. It just is so wrong, period. And the silence about it is so deafening in all quarters. I guess the Atlantic probably did the article as a public service. Because, you know, there's this pervasive feeling in our community that we shouldn't be public about our criticism of Barack Obama. We should be uncomfortable about it and embarrassed about it. So in that thinking, I guess they might have said, you know, let's do a public service here. And since, in any event, a thing becomes important when it has the stamp of the liberal approval. So they've now officially approved it. It is now a good thing. It is real now. Black folks are saying it is not real. So maybe now that the Atlantic has raised a question as a major question, as the leading question, maybe we can get into the discussion after all. Well, is this a news charge? No. We both know that. You've been listening to this program since I've come on. I've been very critical of Barack Obama. I don't take any delight in it. In fact, it's infuriating. Because so much hope had been invested in this man, and so much energy, and so much purpose directed at lifting him into political orbit. So this is not a new question, but it is significant that a leading journal of American thought, culture, and politics would ask the question, has President Obama done enough for Black Americans? Well, 3 years ago, that is to say more than a year into his first term, Tavis Smiley, the syndicated talk show host, brought together leading Black voices from all walks of life and from all over the country to discuss Mr. Obama's apparent imperviousness to Black concerns. It was quite apparent even then. The conference was held in Chicago, the president's hometown, on March the 20th, 2010. Michael Eric Dyson, a sociology professor at Georgetown University, was the first one up at bat to answer Tavis Smiley's question about just how much wiggle room, how much elastic, or how much more elastic should blacks give the president with respect to their high priority items. Here's what Dyson said.
That Barack Obama is the first black president. He doesn't have to be. We don't want him to be the last. And there's only so far down the field he can push the ball. Maybe our expectations of him as the first are unreasonable.
Well, Tavis, that's ludicrous, as Mike Tyson might say. And because everybody, you know, I was the first, so I wanted to be calm and reasonable in articulating my viewpoint. But, you know, I'm fired up right now. All right. And I'm going to just take half a minute more because I want to say this. First of all, he is the first black president, but we got to remember that. Jackie Robinson was the first. Jackie Robinson wasn't the best ball player. He was the best ball player suited to exist under the conditions that white folk would impose upon him. So I'm not suggesting that Mr. Obama is not a brilliant man. I knew him earlier than most people in this building, since 91. I was with Obama when most people who were black were with Hillary Clinton, when they were calling him Barack Obama. I knew who he was. I loved him. So I take second seat to no one. I love him. I love him walking down Air Force One. I love how he walks down and hollers at people. I love how he looks at black folk. I love how he looks at white folk. I love how he gives that Negro intimacy that is communicated telepathically. I love all of the symbolic gestures that are articulated from Obama. But at the end of the day, he's Jackie Robinson. I'm waiting for Willie Mays to come behind him because Willie's got a hell of a thing. Number two. How you gonna say you just the president of black folk? No, Sherlock. We didn't know that. Of course we knew that. I'm the very person who said he got to holler at white folk and wink at us. So don't tell me that I didn't understand that you had to engage in code switching, which is the predicate for acceptance in the larger circle of white supremacist logic, so that you could then get in with a black voice. But don't get up in there and become who you said you were against to begin with. Your point is that, and I'm not talking about black versus white, I'm talking about right versus wrong. So my point is, you are the president of everybody, which includes me. I am from America too. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. That's in America. New Jersey ain't got to be New York to be part of America. I ain't got to be white to be part of America. Latinos asking them for something and they got something. Gay and lesbian said don't ask, don't tell, changed it. Jewish brothers and sisters said deal with Israel, deal with it. All of those are specific entities. Why is it when it comes to Negroes? Why is it when it comes to black folk? All of a sudden we are persona non grata. I tell you, Mr. Obama, to deal with the black agenda is what every president before you had to do. How you gonna be any different? Abraham Lincoln had to deal with race. George Washington had to deal with race. LBJ had to deal with race. How come you the first president that ain't got to deal with race? It wasn't a black president who passed the Civil Rights Bill. It wasn't a black president who passed the Voting Rights Act. It wasn't a black president who passed the Fair Housing Act. It wasn't a black president who dealt with fair housing. It wasn't a black president who dealt with affirmative action. You gonna be like every other president, deal with race. If you want to be great, deal with the Negro question. Now let me say this. How you gonna say this? One size does not fit all. When you go to the hospital, some people take an aspirin for hangnails. Some people take an insulin for diabetes. And some people take in chemotherapy for cancer. Ain't no such thing as a rising tide lifts all boats. You got to target your particular reality and tailor the public policy. And let me say this. First of all, everybody ain't got no boat. So you need to make some funds available for boat making. Then when we get the boat, some people got them little dinghies out there, and some people got some cruise liners. And the folk with the cruise liners don't give a damn what you do anyway. So the rising tide is not going to benefit us because we are being displaced by those big cruisers. How are you going to deny Negroes money, 17% almost unemployment, 9% with white folk, 12% with Latinos, and tell me it's all equal? I'm telling you this. You bailed out the notorious AIG. You bailed them out. You bailed out General Motors, but you can't bail out African-American people who put together dimes and nickels and had parties for you to make sure that you could get up in the White House. And now when you get there, you can't have amnesia. Let me say this. Let me say this.
Last second, Dr. Graham.
Let me say this, and I'm going to be done. It ain't no stimulus, it's stimulim. We ain't been stimulated. Look, when the money, as Dr. Malvo said, goes to the states, look at what monies have gone to the states. Montana and Dakota have gotten $1,200 per state resident. Those are the least diverse states in the nation. The most diverse states, Texas, New Jersey, New York, Florida, got $600 per. So even by Mr. Obama's logic, if it's a race-neutral, colorblind distribution of resources, even in that setup, black folk ain't getting it. So I want to tell you this. When you talk to Mr. Obama, I love him. I love him like my brother because I'm so proud of him. Don't mistake cultural pride for political accountability. Black people think that Obama is Martin Luther King Jr. Excuse me. Martin Luther King Jr. shed blood in Memphis. From that blood and the soil in which that blood was mixed sprouted every ability of black people in a post-King era to survive. When that martyrdom rose up, it was 40 years from King's assassination to Obama's inauguration. So don't tell me you stencil his face next to King's and they're the same. You think Obama is Moses. He is not Moses. He's Pharaoh. You got to understand that Pharaoh, I'm not dogging him. I'm talking about his office. One man is a prophet, another man is a politician. It is time to say to Pharaoh, not let our people go, let our resources go, let that money go, let that love flow. I know white folk don't want you to love us, but you came from us. Before they knew you, we loved you, we birthed you, we gave you acceptance. You were biracial, but black folk made you a black man in America. Now represent us. Don't dog us when we need you. We love you. We just want some love back.
Well, as you can tell, he wasn't worked up at all. That is Michael Eric Dyson from Georgetown University. And you can tell from the passion that even then, this is 3 years ago, that was the palpable feeling among a whole bunch of black folks all across the nation who had at that time the opportunity to observe the conduct of this president. And the conduct of this president was very clear. You have served your purpose. I talk about black folks in the electoral sense. Historically, since we've been voting, historically, our job is like the booster rockets that get the payload into altitude, the desired altitude. And when the heavy payload reaches the proper altitude, it just jettisons the booster rockets. They're of no further use. That's been our president. And he has exhibited this particular conduct specifically to the very political base that gave him the possibility of a political life. He's talking about all kinds of things. These are the hot button agendas that he has. But what does the Atlantic actually say? Here's some of the article. It says that blacks, the recession may be over for the country as a whole, but blacks aren't feeling the recovery. Black unemployment remains double that for whites. The median income gap between white and black households has hit a record high. Blacks have half the access to health care as whites. The net wealth of black families, it continues, dropped. The net wealth of black families dropped by 27.1% during the recession. One in 15 African-American men is incarcerated compared to one in 106 white men. Blacks make up 38% of inmates. Well, actually, I just checked with the U.S. Department of Justice. African-Americans are about 13% of the population, but account for 40.1% of almost 2.1 million male, that's just male, inmates in prison or in jail. And the leading cause of incarceration of African-American men is nonviolent drugs offenses. The article continues. 27% of African Americans are now living below the poverty line. And I've said the vast majority of poor people in this country as a whole are children. African Americans, it says the article, this I'm reading from the article, African Americans are the only demographic group with higher unemployment today than when Obama took office. Imagine that. Black teen unemployment in 1965 was 29%. Officially, today, they say it's 40%, but we know it's at least twice that, and possibly more. And it goes on to mention the Blue Dog Coalition within the Democratic Party. The Blue Dog Coalition is that group of Democrats who identify themselves as conservatives. That's the group that our president is riding with. He's a blue dog. And that's why he could close his eyes, literally, and cut $60 billion from urban communities that desperately need it. And that's why he can close his eyes and escalate war in Afghanistan, where black soldiers also are dying. The article says, when Representative John Conyers of Michigan, one of the most senior and respected members of the Black Caucus, criticized Obama for watering down health care reform and taking advice from clowns, that was Conyers' word, clowns, the president called him and pointedly asked Conyers why he was demeaning him. It was 5 months and more before this president actually invited the Congressional Black Caucus to meet with him. 5 months and more. The first groups that he met with were the Blue Dogs. He had to get his marching orders from them. Somebody's got to give him marching orders. And now comes the big test, the budget. We exposed the hypocrisy and the downright lies of the sequester when the president was talking about all these evil things that the Republicans had in store, when in fact he was the person who initiated the sequester. That was his bright idea. And I told you then, if you've been paying attention, it's what's coming next. Don't worry about that. It's what's coming next. And here we are. We are at next. This president has decided that the concerns of African Americans. And why am I talking about African Americans? Because in any society, you judge the degree to which a society is just by the degree to which the least of them are treated. And by any measure, when you look at people of color in this country and what they are facing, you have no doubt that there's injustice running amok. And it shouldn't be that way, not under a black president. No. Not under a black president who dared to put his hand on the Bible of Martin Luther King. It was a good photo op, but he does not spiritually, philosophically, or politically commit to anything that Martin Luther King says. Schools are closing because his underqualified Secretary of Education is the point man for that. He's done a marvelous job in Chicago. Privatization of public education. Give him charter schools and make them wait to even get into those. Reclaim the properties that those schools once were. Reclaim them for the city and pass them on to your pals in real estate in every major urban center across the country. Reclamation of land is masquerading as an effort to reform education. Suddenly we have these hot button issues with the gun control. There is nothing in the so-called reform bills that has anything to do with black folks and their issues with gun control. Not a thing. And it wasn't to the escalating death toll among blacks across the country, especially in urban areas. That was not the impetus for moving quickly on gun control. It's that white children are dying, so it now is a problem. It's real now. And you can fix it with these, you know, whether you register your gun or whether you can get 10 bullets or 400 bullets and so forth. None of these things applies in our community. To fix gun violence in our community, you will need courage. You will need insight. You will need leadership, and you'll need sincerity of purpose. None of these things applies to Mr. Obama. Because to deal with gun violence in our community, you will now have to ask, who is saturating the community with guns? Many times the police are the agents selling the guns. I've told you time again about in the Bronx, Larry Davis was actually running a drug, gun, and prostitution ring for police. You'll have to get rid of that horrible phrase called the known drug location. You'll have to get into things like good, solid education. You'll have to deal with affordable housing. You'll have to deal with intolerable levels of unemployment. That's how you solve the gun problem in our communities. But you don't have the guts to do that. So you confine the issue. You tell people you're making reforms. You're not making reforms. You're a tweaker. You tweak. You're satisfying a constituency you like better than you like anybody else. You have immigration as your hot button issue. I say, great. But there are 106,000 visas that have been okayed, that have been approved, so that Haitians who are still suffering as a result of the earthquake 3 years ago, even the right wing has said, get the program on the road. You say no. In fact, you say worse than no. You say nothing. But you are going to reform immigration. You have no response at all for the burning issues in our community. Just talk and symbolism. What are you going to do about the gun violence? You don't have anything innovative going there. You surround yourself with all these people, most of whom are ill-qualified, completely underqualified. As I said, the education secretary needs an education. Where in the modern world could you have somebody in cabinet level making educational policy with just a BA in sociology? Where could you have, in the developed world, somebody who's now a Secretary of State? You make this person Secretary of State, whose main qualification was that she was the wife of a sexual predator and stood by his side while he defecated on the office. And you reward her with a U.S. Senate seat. She walks out of the White House and into the Senate. And now she may be your president. None of which would have been possible, neither for her nor her sexual predator husband, had it not been for the black vote. This is why I say to black folks, you better wake up. You have so devalued yourselves. You place no value on this hard-won thing called the vote. You give it away. And then you wonder why people treat it the way you treat it. You have to Well, we had a scheduled break, and I didn't know. But I'll get back into the groove. The thing is this. We have to stop singing Hail to the Chief and say hell to the chief. This chief ought to get some hell from our community because he has so insulted it. He has so dismissed it. He has so contemptuously treated it that we really will deserve whatever we get if we don't fight and if we don't make it clear that this is not what we will tolerate. We will not tolerate this, not from him especially. Oh, heck no. You surround yourself with all these mediocre people who have spawned multi-million dollar enterprises around you, based and predicated on the black vote. And we can show nothing. And we are into the first year of your second term. And people are still embarrassed. Oh, we shouldn't talk about this. You know, the man is just new. He just got in there. No, no, no. You presented yourself as ready and capable of leadership. And we see that you can exercise leadership, but you're a bit choosy. You can exercise leadership automatically when you understand that there will be a price to pay if you don't respond appropriately. We understand that you are managed. We understand why you're there. We understand it now. You've had the benefit of time. You've had the benefit of doubt. You failed on both counts. You deserved neither time nor doubt. And I say this to the community. If you want to suffer this indignity in silence, do not complain when twice this comes at you. You want to hide your embarrassment. You're not supposed to be embarrassed. You did everything that was asked of you. You outperformed every other community. You made this man possible as a legal entity. You performed miracles already. The other day, they're sending his wife out now to plead his cause. And he's so thick in the head right now, he doesn't even get it, that that too is an insult. The first lady is the first lady. She's not supposed to be trotted out to plead your cause. You have no respect, not even for your wife, to have people use her that way. You know, she comes to plead to the black community. Well, Barack isn't finished yet, and what we need you to do is to be on his side. No, 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 no. Number one, this is not your fight, Mrs. Obama. You're the first lady. You're not the garden variety political snake oil saleswoman. And don't ever let anybody use you that way. We have a fight with your husband. And it's going to get loud, hopefully. It will get loud, and it will get seriously loud. And it will get brutal, because the bottom line is, we have to be obsessive and ruthless about our interests. The time has come. Your calls and comments at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. The time has come. The time has come. Hail to the chief. No. Let's send some fire. He should feel some hell coming his way. That's what he needs right now. And that's what we need to do. That's our job. Our job is to protect the integrity of our vote, irrespective of who is underperforming. And our job is to honor the lives of people who just were dispatched from this earth so ingloriously because of this right to vote. And we cast it away on people like this. And they create political possibilities for everybody. All kinds of enterprises are flourishing. All kinds of political work is being done. All predicated. All these people who now have the science of politics and who now have the knowledge and the skills that they have parlayed into millions and millions and millions of dollars, all predicated on foot soldiers running out there in the hot sun, knocking door to door. I have a friend who spent practically the entire summer on a bus going from place to place to talk to people about the importance of voting for Barack Obama. Twice she did that. And she is not even well. No, Mr. Obama, you don't rate. You don't rate at all. Not on that level. Hello, Jay, you're on the air. Thank you for joining me.
Hello, Yatrice. How was your weekend? Good, I hope.
Fine, thank you.
Listen, did you by chance see the movie The Django yet?
No.
Okay, well, when you get a chance to view the movie, hopefully when it comes out, I think it's in another week or two on DVD, take a critical look at the character of Stephen.
You know, let me tell you, movies, reality is just so scary. I can't imagine any movie being scarier than where we are right now, or being more informative than where we are right now. I don't need to interpret an unreality. The reality that we're dealing with is so scary that we need to concentrate on that. We don't need to be distracted by movies or by books. It's going to be a repeat of what happened when Steven Spielberg made A Color Purple, where half of black folks weren't talking to the other half. It's a movie.
No, the reason why I would say that to you is because if you look at that character and you put all of the things in context since we've been captured here in America, you will see that Obama is the modern day Stefan. Now, once you see it, just put that in the back of your mind and you'll be able to understand that, because all of the things that he's doing right now is not to benefit that African American.
Well, we know that. My point is that is already established, Jay. It is already established what he's not doing. The question really is, what are we doing? Forget him. What are we doing?
This is what I'm trying to say. Because we are so mesmerized by him, because we are so in control by him, that we're not doing the necessary things to protest against him and to stand up against him, because there's no leadership that we have out there to follow. And unfortunately, we as a people, if we don't have leadership to follow, we don't make the critical analysis and stand up and do the things that are necessary to put this man's feet to the fire.
I disagree entirely, because I see that there are communities that aren't waiting for leadership. They are clear about their interests, and they mobilize with respect to their interests. They're not waiting for some messianic character to come around and say, all right, I am your leader. Here's what we are going to do, and then proceed. No, and we're tired of that. You know, we have to break that mold, this mold of the leader. Look how many leaders we have had. And look, they put us right back on the political plantation. They have commodified the civil rights movement. They have monetized it, and they have served and continue to serve as interlopers. They're the people that the power structure goes to find out whether they could take on the task of keeping their people in check. Thanks, Jay, for joining me today. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. What are you going to do? What are you thinking? Does Mr. Obama need any more leeway? Does he need any further consideration? George, what are you thinking from New Jersey?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. If you look at Obama's background, how he's been raised, his parents, that should answer all your questions.
Well, we got that, but still, I'm able to separate all of that, because in the end, it boils down to we have a stake. We have a stake in the outcome here. The stake is we brought this man into the White House to do, I mean, nobody's asking for grandiose things. We're asking for some modicum of justice, and not just for black people, because the history of justice is very clear. Black folks have advocated, but the things they've advocated have ended up being for the benefit of everyone. You know, so we get that. So the question is, we understood all of that when, you know, in 2008, he was elected the first time. Okay, now we are at 2013. What are we going to do about this man? What are we going to do about our interests that continue to be unmet?
There's a lot we can do, but this generation, I don't have any hope for any activity in relation to protest or anything like that in this generation. This generation is spoiled. It's taking things for granted. It has no the spirit of protest and activism is not within this generation. So
I beg to differ. I have seen Occupy movement. That's a generation.
True.
The Occupy movement is that's generation two. And they're
true.
Doing, they are moving on the issues.
Yes, but I wish they were more organized. It seemed to be fractured. It has the intention, but the organization, I don't see it in the Occupy.
Here's my view, George, on that.
Okay.
It doesn't bother me. It is the nature of all kinds of movements like that, spontaneous movements. It's the nature of all of that. But I look at, what are we doing when we define for them how they choose to react? We can't define for people how they choose to react. They're reacting the way they choose to react. We don't know their structure. Maybe they do. But at the same time, we have all the answers. We are, the African-American community does not need another survey. It does not need another poll. It does not need another study. It doesn't need anything more. It has all the information, all the resources, all the reality it needs to make a definitive decision. And it won't do it.
And you're trying to search the reason why?
No, I'm just saying, I'm making it clear that when the axe falls, and that's imminent by Wednesday, we will see the beginnings of how heavy the axe will fall.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Nobody, I don't want to hear anybody complaining about this man. I don't want to hear any complaints. If you complain, I'm going to hunt you down. I'm going to come and find you and give you a Brooklyn beatdown. We have seen what's coming. And we see that, what is really bad about it and what leaves a bad taste is that this man's purpose, his singular purpose, seems to be literally the annihilation of his people. I'm saying his people. I'm using the word loosely here.
Intentional or unintentional?
Oh, intentional. Very, very much intentional. He intentionally ignores the Congressional Black Caucus. He intentionally ignores his constituency, black constituency. He intentionally ignores things that should occur to him.
Well, it goes back to proving my point, how he'd been raised, who his parents are.
And look, he's in his 40s. He should, the way he said to the Congressional Black Caucus, get over it, he said to them in so many words. Get over all these complaints that you have. Stop your complaining, he said to them, like he's in a position to lecture people. Stop your complaining, he says to people who have many years his senior, and who many of them, not all of them are a waste of time. Many of them have been troopers. And he gets in front of them and he says, stop your complaining. And get, throw off your, I believe he said it, like your bedroom slippers.
Yeah. I remember the little speech he gave, yeah.
You think he would do that? You think he could go to any white community and talk to people that way? And yeah. Still be president?
Still, I think it just proves my point. It proves my point, definitely. Because, like, the spirit, the soul, there's no connection. Although he pretends he has a connection, but there is none.
I am beyond Mr. Obama. I'm still concerned about the fact that in our community, we are not seeing what would resonate with us as an appropriate response. I'm over him.
I hear you.
Do you really, George? Thank you so much. Really.
Okay,
thank
welcome.
You so much for calling. Thank you.
Okay.
888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm your Treece Lead. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You're going to be We're going to be grumbling and mumbling under our breath because we don't want anybody to know that we're not happy, as if that's the issue. It's politics, and politics is very straightforward. You ask for our support, we give it to you. We gave it to you under extreme circumstances. We jumped over all kinds of hoops and hurdles, and not just black folks, but all progressive people did this for you. But your own base, you have complete contempt for. No, 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 that shouldn't happen. And we have to mature as a community and dole out some punishment. Not just to Mr. Obama, to the offending party. The Democratic Party, if the Democrats within this party don't stand up to him, forget about it. Dominique from California.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I love your show, just by the way. I'm going to make my comments very brief.
Thank you.
I agree with you 100% about this guy, and I also agree with you 100% about the Occupy movement, except you notice in that movement there wasn't a lot of young blacks.
Yes.
And I believe that, I hate to say it, you know, I'm African American myself. I think they're overly materialistic, and the young people I'm talking about, they're overly materialistic, and they... Well, it's happening to all young people in this generation to a certain extent, but I think it's overly so in the black community. You know what I mean? And they thrive on sound bites, and it's this whole cult of personality. Let's just sum it up that way.
Well, it's like, I have to differ with you, and I'll tell you why. I find it so disappointing, so very disappointing and disheartening that the older folks are the ones who are falling down on
right.
the job.
Right.
The younger That's ones are saying, let's go, let's go, let's go. And the older
and
ones say, well,
there.
You know.
Yeah, I think it's each and. I think it's both, because you've even had a couple of older guests on your show, and I'm not putting anybody down or denigrating anybody for what they believe, but they still stick by this guy just because he's the first black president.
Correct.
And I even have to talk to my mother, who is in her 60s, and tell her, you know, the Democratic and Republican Party, it's not like it used to be. You know, there's no difference. There's basically no difference now. There are little minor tweaks and little differences, but there's really no difference. And this guy is a corporately sold out Democrat. It's what he is. And he's not even a Democrat, actually. He's a Reagan type Republican. It's what he is.
He is a blue dog. He's a blue dog Democrat.
Right. And that's what we used to call the Reagan Democrats who, mm-hmm. you know, voted for Reagan anyway and this type of stuff. But I believe it's both. I believe the issue with the young people is what I stated. We can sort of differ on that a little bit. But I also believe that the older people are hooked to this guy in that way. And that's what's getting in the way in our community I'm speaking of.
I think you're correct. I mean, your assessment is correct. I can't disagree with you on that. But I don't see that as an issue. I see
right.
the issue being, what are we doing within our communities to educate our communities that this is what the reality is?
It's very, very hard to do, Utrice. I'm going to tell you, I'm a journalist, and I have a publication. I'm online, and I used to release in hard copy. And I talk to black people, black youth at colleges. I talk to actually blacks of all age ranges, and it's very hard to get past that. They think they know what they know, and that's how it is. You know, it's hard to break that down. It really is. It's very hard.
I understand you. I don't disagree with you. We have no disagreement, except that I think the task now for those of us who see what the reality is, even if it offends people in our circle, we have to start talking about it. And it's like having, you know, a neighbor for as a child molester, you know, you know it, but you want to keep quiet. You know, that's, we don't want these kinds of things.
I will say this, that it's getting a little easier to talk to people in this way and let them know what's going on, because the reality is starting to hit them in the face. It hasn't really hit them yet, but it's starting to get there. People are open now, because I remember when he was first elected, you know, I knew what this guy was about from the beginning, and I'm not trying to say I'm just that, you know, smart or whatever. I voted for him, but only because I felt like, well, there may be some shenanigans. Let's make sure this guy gets in. And maybe. I voted for him in 2008. I did not in 2012. But that's the reason I voted for him. So, back in 2009 when he was first elected, it was like trying to chew on a brick wall, you know, to get people to even be open to get people to even be open to what you know about this guy's past. And I'm telling him,
well, you know, we're getting close to the end of the program. I hate to cut you, but what I want to encourage you to do is to please continue the conversation with me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook at Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead.
Thank you.
Conversation we have to keep going, because we have those people who know in their heart of hearts that something is wrong. Maybe they need the consolation that they're not alone in their thinking, and maybe they're quiet because, you know, you're correct. It's a hard thing for people to psychologically get over. They feel that they're being, they're betraying some kind of a code of solidarity or something. But try, please, to keep in touch. And I'd like to know about your publication, too. Thank you so much for calling. Well, this brings us to the end of our program today. But it certainly has not brought us to the end of this issue. And now we're seeing that, hey, it's out in the open. We're not the only ones. This is not some figment of our imagination. It is now officially being asked, has President Obama done enough for blacks in America? That's the question. All right. Coming up next is Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. You want to stay tuned for that. And again, really do make an effort to tell people about this program and about this station, PRN.FM. Thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. ¶¶